This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, joined Andrew Marr in the studio this morning, and the conversation soon turned to the Indian variant of the coronavirus, which has recently been rebranded as the Delta variant by the World Health Organization. This variant has now been recognised by Public Health England as the UK's dominant strain. Marr asked Hancock about how it could affect the government's roadmap to unlocking on the 21st of June.
Let's turn to the agonising choice ahead about the 21st of June. It's a really, really difficult decision. I think people understand that now. With the information you've got, how much more transmissible is the Delta variant?
Well, the best estimate of the growth advantage, as we call it, of the Delta variant from SAGE is around 40%.
40%.
So that does make life more challenging for everybody. And you've seen that the case rates have risen a little. But the good news is that the hospitalizations, the number of people arriving at hospital, is broadly flat, and the majority appear to be those who have not had a vaccine at all, and only a very small minority are people who've had both jabs. So what the best scientific advice I have at this stage is that after one jab, it's not quite as effective against the new Delta variant, but after both jabs, it is, so that's why it's so important that we drive through these vaccinations and people come forward for their second jab.
If the data turns bad, would you delay the 21st of June openings?
Well, we're absolutely open to doing that if that's what it needs to happen. We said in the roadmap that the 21st of June is the date by which we would not take step four before that date, and we'd look at the data. That's exactly what we're doing. So the roadmap was set up in order to be able to take these sorts of changes into account.
Last week, Dominic Cummings accused Hancock of lying to the Prime Minister about whether people being transferred from hospitals to care homes had been receiving COVID tests during the early stages of the pandemic. Marr put Cummings' allegations straight to Hancock.
We've talked an awful lot about this. I am just looking really for a yes or no answer about this, because it's a very straightforward question. Did you tell Boris Johnson in March that people sent from hospitals into care homes were being tested when you knew they weren't?
No, I did not.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Were you so Dominic Cummings was lying about that?
No, because I think that he, in what he just said, he said that people would be. And the truth is, of course, that was the policy to get people those tests available.
All right.
But I had to build this testing capacity. It didn't exist.
So before it existed, were you sending people from hospitals into care homes knowing that they might have COVID and they weren't being tested?
Well, we know absolutely that the testing wasn't available to test everybody. And if you recall at the time, the advice was, the clinical advice, was that very few people would be able to pass on COVID if they didn't have any symptoms. So the testing was reserved for those who had symptoms because there was so little testing available.
So the answer is people were being sent. You said there wasn't the capacity, but on the 27th of March, by the 27th of March, you had the capacity to do 10,000 tests a day. And we're talking in total here about 25,000 people. So if you'd put that, if that had been your focus, you could have done all this testing within 3 days.
No, because we need tests for all sorts of other things as well.
Yeah, you know,
we need.
But it's priorities, isn't it?
And there's other people's lives we needed to save too. Mm. So when there isn't enough testing capacity, of course there's challenges and areas where you'd like to use it, and that's why I set the target.
So,
and if you remember,
there was the capacity there. It's a question of where your priority was.
No.
10,000 a day you were doing by then.
No,
we were talking about 25,000 people in total.
So, just a couple of things on that. The first is, the specific accusation which you played was from the start of March, when there wasn't 10,000, there was more like just over 2,000 tests, and it was only because I was driving this testing expansion so much that we ended up with the bigger capacity. But secondly, to say you could test all these people if you did no other tests for 3 days, well, there are other uses for the test that are just as, if not more, life-saving.
A group of Conservative rebels are putting pressure on the government to reverse its cut to the overseas aid budget from 0.7% to 0.5% of GNI.
Speaking to Trevor Phillips, Hancock put the government's case for the cut ahead of a possible vote on the matter this week.
I'm going to talk to Tom Tugendhat in a few minutes, Secretary of State. He is one of, it is estimated, 30 or 40 rebels on this foreign aid legislation. What can you offer him to persuade him to fall in line?
Well, I think that the decisions that the government's taken around this are entirely reasonable. We face a once-in-300-year economic interruption. The cost of that to the Exchequer has been hundreds of billions of pounds. So it is reasonable, absolutely reasonable in the circumstances, when we're delivering over £10 billion of aid as a country, and we're making available this vaccine at cost, and we have such a strong history in this area, it is absolutely reasonable to take the decision that the government has.
The Shadow Foreign Secretary, Lisa Nandy, argued in favour of vaccinating school-aged children now that the UK's healthcare regulator has deemed the Pfizer vaccine to be safe to give to children over 12.
Do you think children should now be vaccinated?
Yeah, I think the regulator was absolutely clear that for 12-year-olds and over, the Pfizer vaccine is safe. And it's becoming apparent that the rise in transmission rates is being driven amongst younger people, not just school-aged children, but secondary school-aged children as well. So I think that it is right to follow the public health officials, particularly those in areas that are saying this is what they want to do. I think the government ought to be listening to people on the front line. You know, this week we've got the most important G7 summit in a generation being hosted by the UK. The Prime Minister is rightly saying he wants to get the world vaccinated. We've got to do our bit here in Britain to break the transmission cycle. We've got one of the highest death tolls in the world because of the failure to get a grip on the virus, and we can't continue to make these same mistakes.
Nandy also called on the government to change its travel advice or be prepared to reap the consequences.
Now, France has said that double vaccinated British people are welcome to come there on holiday quite shortly, and they won't need to face quarantining. Do you think they should be facing quarantining as they come back again?
Well, I think we've got a real, real problem with the travel system that the government has put in place. We've currently got countries on the amber list, which the government is basically urging people not to go to, but allowing people to go to with very lax quarantine requirements when they come back.
So you want tougher ones?
Yeah, we think the amber list should be scrapped. We think it's pointless. We think it's confusing, and that confusion is actually dangerous at the moment. It risks unravelling all of the progress that we've made.
To be clear, do you think that people who've gone on holiday or go on holiday to France and then come back should be quarantined?
Look, I think that we should have robust quarantine measures in place for people coming back into the country.
Right. That's
absolutely right. But I also think that we need to be much clearer with people that at the moment, travelling overseas, particularly when you've got countries like Thailand and Vietnam on the amber list where new variants are emerging and being imported into the UK, is the wrong thing to do. And the government ought to be absolutely clear about that.
This week, Labour will call a vote on the government's plans to help school children catch up on the education that they have missed out on during the pandemic. The vote will come after the resignation of Sir Kevin Collins, the recovery czar, who deemed that the planned £1.5 billion made available fell far short of what was needed. The Shadow Education Secretary, Kate Green, spoke to Jack Blanchard on Times Radio about the vote.
You've called this vote in Parliament this week on the government's COVID catch-up plan for kids in schools. Do you have the votes you need, the support on the Tory backbenches to actually win this vote, do you think?
Well, I hope Conservative MPs and indeed MPs from all parties will support us. And we have heard, for example, Robert Halfon, the Conservative chair of the Education Select Committee, criticising the government's plans as piecemeal. We've heard other Conservative MPs, Anne-Marie Morris, for example, asking if the Treasury even lives in the real world. And I think when you see such a gap between what the government's own expert education advisor, Kevin Collins, recommended and what the Chancellor of the Exchequer was actually prepared to cough up for, I very much hope we will see Conservative MPs and MPs from all parties supporting us in the vote this week. Because, you know, every political party has said, Boris Johnson said, Keir Starmer has absolutely said, children and young people must be our top priority. But, you know, it turns out to be a completely hollow promise when Boris Johnson will not lift a finger to say to his Chancellor, this is my number one priority, and we need to make sure that we have the resources to deliver the education and other activities that children and young people need to bounce back from the pandemic.
The former Prime Minister Tony Blair spoke to Marr about his Institute's latest paper on the pandemic recovery.
The paper we're putting out today is saying we should really distinguish between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. So both here at home, if we do have to adjust some of the freedoms because of the rising pressure from new variants, then it's important at least to ensure that those people who are vaccinated have the maximum freedom they can. And I think that could also be done for travel as well.
Is it acceptable to turn down a vaccine, do you think?
Unless you've got a good medical reason, my view very clearly is no. And I think that's why it's important to give people a real incentive to get vaccinated. Because, you know, if you are vaccinated, the evidence is absolutely clear. It reduces the risk of transmission and it reduces the risk of hospitalisation or death.
So would you make them mandatory?
I don't think you can make them mandatory, but I think, and this is what we're suggesting today, by making it clear that, for example, if you are vaccinated, if you're double vaccinated, it should be much easier to come in and out of the country. And indeed, round the world, I think, you will find that countries start to distinguish between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. So in Europe, for example, they're going to allow you to travel freely within Europe if you're double vaccinated.
The trouble is, this does create, does it not, a two-tier society between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Looking at your own paper says that if you haven't been vaccinated, you won't be able to go to nightclubs and theatres and big sporting events and many other places. So you will be discriminated against.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the word discrimination has got a very loaded meaning in the English language now. But really, when it comes to risk management, it's all about discrimination. So the reason we vaccinate elderly people first is they're more at risk. The reason why we ensure that people are vaccinated is because it then reduces the risk of transmission, not merely of you getting ill yourself, but of you passing on the disease. So I think since everybody's going to be able to get the vaccination, other than those, as I say, who for medical reasons can't, then I think it really is important that people get encouraged to get vaccinated. And we also make suggestions as to how we can make sure you get proper proof of vaccination. I mean, actually, the NHS X people have done a good job in the NHS app, but we need to make that interoperable with other systems so that you can use this as proof of vaccination throughout the world.
And finally, the musician and campaigner Sir Bob Geldof put the case for reversing the international aid cuts ahead of the G7 summit in Cornwall at the end of this week.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense economically, financially, politically, diplomatically, of course, morally, or in the humanitarian consequences of it. And I'm very much afraid that something that we're told is temporary will become permanent. And that would be vastly damaging for Britain's soft power, for its reputation, particularly at a weekend when we invite the world's most powerful leaders and the world's biggest economies to come here and talk about such matters with us. It seems remarkably maladroit and inept.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.